So then here in Deuteronomy 18 and verse 15, with this prophecy showing the prophecy of Jesus Christ. Now let's tie that together with some of the events that occurred. First of all, let's go to, before we go there, let's go to Deuteronomy 34 and verse 9. And here again is another prophecy about Jesus Christ. And also, it talks about a prophecy, or a statement rather, about Moses, showing how important that Moses was. Now this statement that is written here in Deuteronomy 34, verses 9 and 10. Verse 10 was an editorial comment written perhaps during the days of Hezekiah. Remember, Hezekiah went into the temple and they found the book of the law, and then they helped compile many of the things together. Then also there is an indication that that could have been an editorial comment by Ezra and Nehemiah after they came out of the Babylonian captivity. So let's read what it says here, beginning in verse 9. And Joshua, the son of Nun, was full of the spirit of wisdom, for Moses had laid hands on him, and the children of Israel listened to him and did as the Lord commanded him. Now notice verse 10. And there arose not a prophet since in Israel like unto Moses, whom the Lord knew face to face in all the signs and wonders which the Lord sent him to do in the land of Egypt to Pharaoh and all of his servants and all the land, and all in all that mighty hand and all the great terror which Moses showed in the sight of all Israel. Now that's quite a statement, isn't it? There rose not a prophet. Well, obviously Moses didn't write that because he was dead. This was an editorial edition which God inspired to be put in there either during the days of Hezekiah or during the days of Ezra and Nehemiah. Now, we go to the book of Daniel. Book of Daniel tells about the prophecies of when Jesus would come. Here, Daniel, the ninth chapter. Now, I'm not going to go through and expound the whole thing, but just to turn there to show that it's talking about when the Messiah would come. And this is the 70-week prophecy. Now, this was given by Daniel, or to Daniel, and written and recorded by Daniel during the Babylonian captivity. Now, you know that the Jews have studied, that they knew what the prophecies were. They knew the 70-week prophecy. And it shows that the Messiah would come at the end of 70 weeks. Now, when we get to the New Testament, we're going to see that they also understood that was the time for Jesus to come. Okay, let's go to the book of Matthew. Book of Matthew. Matthew 2. Well, before we get there, let's just back up a few pages to Malachi, the fourth chapter. Malachi, the fourth chapter, because this gives us an indication. This gives us an indication of what the Jews were told to look for. Here, Malachi, the fourth chapter, and verse 4. Now, Malachi was the last prophet to write. And then after this, the Jews went into a decline in writing in the Bible, because then they went through the situation with the Hellenization with the Greeks. They went through the Maccabean Revolution. And then you come down to the time of a high priest called John Hyrcanus, which was about 165 B.C. And that was the last miracle that was done, the very last miracle. But here the last prophet to write says, remember you the law of Moses my servant, which I commanded unto him in Horeb for all Israel with the statutes and judgments. Behold, I will send you Elijah the prophet before the coming of the great and dreadful day of the Lord. And he shall turn the heart of the fathers to the children and the heart of the children to the fathers, lest I come and smite the earth with a curse. Now, this also indicated what they were looking for. And the Jews today are still looking for Elijah. As a matter of fact, when they have their Passover, and they set their Passover, they set an empty chair and an empty plate for Elijah. Now, they don't realize that John the Baptist was Elijah. Jesus said that John the Baptist was Elijah, the one who would come. Now let's just turn the page to Matthew, the second chapter. Matthew, the second chapter. Let's pick it up here in verse 1. Now, when Jesus was born in Bethlehem of Judea in the days of Herod the king, behold, there came wise men from the east to Jerusalem, saying, Where is he that is born king of the Jews? For we have seen his star in the east and have come to worship him. Now, there are many secular theories that people have concerning the star in the east. Some say, well, it was Halley's Comet, and others say, well, it was another comet. Well, I think it was a special star, and along with the situation with an angel, because we know angels are also called stars, and that actually led them where they were to go. Because if it was Halley's Comet, how could it lead them where to go, stop, and then reappear? And besides, you can't see Halley's Comet very good unless it comes really close to the Earth. You know, this year everyone went out with their binoculars to try and see Halley's Comet. I know my son David got up and he saw it and he was really disappointed. He said, well, it's kind of a fizzle. See, so I'm sure it wasn't Halley's Comet. And Herod the king, when he heard these things, he was troubled and all Jerusalem with him. So when he had gathered, this is the key verse here. When he had gathered all the chief priests and scribes of the people together, he demanded of them where Christ should be born. Now the chief priest and scribes, they were the keepers of the word of God. They understood what was in it. They were the ones who read it. Now notice their answer. So they said to him, in Bethlehem of Judea. So they knew exactly where it was. For thus it's written in the prophet. And unto you, Bethlehem, in the land of Judah, are not the least among the princes of Judah. For out of you shall come a governor that shall rule my people Israel. So they understood where he was to be born. They understood when he was coming. And Herod, when he called them privately, inquired of them diligently what time the star appeared. So he's trying to figure out exactly when it was. So he sent them to Bethlehem and said, Go search diligently for the young child, and when you found him, bring me word again that I may also come and worship him. Well, you know the rest of the story. He didn't want to worship Christ. He didn't want to have competition as king, one born king of the Jews. Now let's see if others also understood about the coming of Christ and knew who they were looking for. Let's go to the book of John. John 1 and verse 19. Now we know the whole account of John the Baptist. So I'm going to assume we know certain parts of the Bible. We know the whole account of John the Baptist, who was sent to prepare the way for Jesus Christ. We know that he baptized with water. We know that he baptized for the remission of sins, saying to them to believe on the one who should follow. We know that John the Baptist baptized Jesus Christ, who is called here in chapter 1 of the book of John, the Lamb of God. Now let's ask the question. Did they know that Christ was about to appear? Now, if they didn't know Christ was about to appear, then these questions would be very strange indeed. And of course, remember the miracle that took place with John the Baptist's father, Zechariah, who was priest at the temple. And they knew that he saw the vision of the angel. And that was the last miracle that occurred from, or the first one rather, that occurred from the time of John Hyrcanus. So they had 165 years with no miracles, no oracles from God. The Urim and Thummim didn't work. You know, that was a breastplate of the stones that they put on. And Josephus records that the Urim and Thummim did not work from the time of John Hyrcanus on. So then John the Baptist's father, Zechariah, is given this tremendous message from the angel Gabriel right inside the temple. And remember, they wondered why he was in there so long. And he came out, and he couldn't speak. And remember, it was just a small word by the angel. And he said, how will this be? And he said, because you didn't believe me, you're not going to speak for the term of this baby being carried by your wife. So here John the Baptist, the father, comes out of the temple, motioning, and everyone knew that something happened. So they said he saw a vision. Now then, all the other events that took place up until this time, let's begin in verse 19. This has to do with John the Baptist when he was baptizing. And this is the record of John when the Jews sent priests and Levites from Jerusalem to ask him, "Who are you?" Now, have you ever thought about asking the question, why did they send priests and Levites out there? Why would they send clear down to John the Baptist and say, "Who are you? What are you doing?" Verse 20, he confessed and denied not, but confessed, "I am not the Christ." Well, why would he say he wasn't the Christ? If they weren't looking for the Christ, if some people didn't come and say, "Are you the Christ?" And if they would ask if he were the Christ, then that shows that they understood that it was about time for Jesus to come. So he said, "I'm not the Christ." And they ask him, "What then? Are you Elijah?" Now, in the King James, it has the S on it because all Greek male names end in S. So it's Elias here, but it really means Elijah. Well, what else does this tell us? This tells us that they were looking for the one that we just read back there in Malachi, the fourth chapter, about Elijah before the coming of the great and dreadful day of the Lord. So these are intelligent questions, aren't they? I mean, they are very specific. If they hadn't read the Bible, and if they didn't know the prophecies of it, they wouldn't be able to ask these questions. And it wasn't just the ordinary Jew. It was the priest and the Levites, and they're the keepers of the law. So he confessed, "I am not the Christ." And they said, "What then? Are you Elijah?" And he said, "No, I'm not." Now notice the next statement. "Are you that prophet?" Now, that's quite an interesting question, isn't it, after we read the prophecy there in Deuteronomy 18? So they knew specifically what they were asking, specifically what they were looking for. "Are you that prophet?" And he answered, "No." Then he said to him, "Well, who are you that we may give an answer to them that sent us?" So they were sent on a specific mission. They were sent down there by the chief priest to find out who this guy is, because everyone was coming to be baptized. And of course, that was disturbing to the whole religious community. After all, they weren't going through the temple, they weren't going through the priesthood, so this created a problem. You see, when we really understand the geographical area of the Holy Land, now if you have a map in your Bible, you can just turn there and look at it sometime, you don't have to now, and that area geographically is very small. Probably no more than 65 miles long and no more than 20 miles wide. Now, granted, they didn't have transportation like we have today. They didn't have telephones like we have today. But believe me, word got around and was carried very swiftly. So they ask him, "Who are you? What do you give an answer that we can tell them when we get back, and those that sent us? What do you say of yourself?" And he said, "I am the voice of one crying in the wilderness." Now that goes right back to Isaiah, the 40th chapter. "Make straight the way of the Lord," as said the prophet Isaiah. And they which were sent of the Pharisees, and they which were sent of the Pharisees, and he asked them, "Why do you baptize then if you are not Christ or Elijah, neither that prophet?" Now, that's a pretty strong statement, isn't it? In other words, they understood that when Christ was going to come, that these events would take place. So that's really good. They understood what was happening. They knew what was occurring. Okay, we'll see some other things that Jesus did during his 3.5-year ministry. And what we're going to really understand is that he literally turned that world upside down. We'll see that as we go along. So then John answered verse 26, saying, "I baptize with water, but there stands one among you whom you know not. It is he who is coming after me, is preferred before me, whose shoes latchet I'm not worthy to loose." And so then this is where John was baptizing down in the Jordan. Now let's go to chapter 2 and verse 13. Chapter 2 and verse 13. It's beginning with the first Passover. Jesus didn't come sneaking into town. He didn't come walking in with some halo, flowing robes and long flowing hair. Let's pick it up here in verse 13. And the Jews' Passover was at hand, and Jesus went up to Jerusalem. And he found in the temple those that sold oxen and sheep and doves and changers of money sitting. And when he made a scourge of small cords, he drove them all out of the temple. Now, this is really an upstart thing to do as far as a priest are concerned. No one goes into the temple area and does what Jesus did. I mean, it would be unthinkable. Now, obviously, this created some kind of stir. Now, what if there were someone that was there at the wedding? Remember, he changed the water to wine? Now, someone were up there at the Passover that was at the wedding said, I remember him. He changed the water to wine. It was the best wine I ever tasted. So here he is. He's driving out the oxen, the sheep, and the doves, and the changers of money sitting. And he poured out the changers' money, verse 15, and overthrew the tables. So he really created a stir. And said unto them that sold doves, take these things hence. In other words, get them out of here, and make not my Father's house a house of merchandise. And oh, that's something that all religions need to learn today, isn't it? Don't make my Father's house a house of merchandise. I remember that when we had our holy days in the other churches, the whole thing was the key of the holy day was the offering, how many people were there, rather than what we should be learning on the holy day. Now, that's merchandising. Another way they merchandise here was when they would come to the Passover, which was called a pilgrim feast. Then they would bring their money from whatever country that they would come from, and they would have the exchangers of currency, so they could exchange the currency, say, from Greece or from Babylon or from Cyprus or Rome, and they would exchange that for the temple coin so they could buy the sacrifices and the animals so that they could offer those. But what happened was those who were exchanging the money didn't give them the going rate of exchange. You know, the people still do that today. You travel overseas and someone's going to give you more, someone's going to give you less. Well, here they were robbing the people, making it a house of merchandise. Now, they had to have the doves, didn't they, because there were sacrifices, and the oxen and the sheep, because those were for sacrifices. But what they did, instead of having them in the appropriate area where they should be, instead of charging a fair price, they would charge an arm and a leg, and they had this all around the temple area, and this became more important than the temple. So Jesus drove them out. Then his disciples remembered that it was written, the zeal of your house has eaten me up. Then answered the Jews and said to him, now what sign are you going to show us, seeing that you do these things? Now if you do these things, you're going to have to show us a sign to show it's from God or not. So then he said, destroy this temple, and in 3 days I will raise it up. Of course, we know that's a prophecy of his own death and resurrection. And then the Jews said, 46 years was this temple in building, and how will you rear it up in 3 days? But he spoke of the temple of his body. When therefore he was risen from the dead, his disciples remembered that he had said this to them, and they believed the scripture and the word that Jesus said. Now, verse 23. And now when he was in the Jerusalem at the Passover, in the feast, now, during the Feast of Unleavened Bread, apparently he spent the whole feast up there. Many believed on his name when he saw the miracles which he did. Now let's understand what kind of feast that they had at Jerusalem. Josephus records that at one time they had 1,200,000 people that would be there at Jerusalem for the feast. And they would come from all the countries. Now, I just want you to recall, we'll turn there a little later in the sermon, but recall all the countries that were listed there in Acts, the second chapter. Jews, devout men from under heaven, from all these countries coming to Jerusalem. Well, that's what they did. They would come to Jerusalem for the feast. Now, let's understand that there were a tremendous number of people there. And Jesus was doing all of these miracles. What do you think the topic of conversation probably was? What if you had one of your relatives that was there and was sick and was healed by Jesus? They go around and tell everyone. Obviously, this was at the beginning of his ministry, the start of what Jesus was doing, and it had to be really a tremendous thing. Now, what if, it says here, for the miracles that he did, it didn't say how many miracles he had done. But obviously, there were many because many people believed on him. Now, let's just think about all the people at the feast that saw it or heard of it and went back to their homes, be it in area of Judea or Galilee or out to all these different countries where the Jews were scattered. What do you think they would say? Oh, we had a fantastic time at the feast, and there was this man called Jesus, and he healed so-and-so. I saw him do it. Now, would you want to, if you stayed back, didn't go to the feast that year, would you want to go the next year? Sure you would. Sure you would. Okay. Because of all the miracles that he had performed. Now, since we're here in the book of John, let's just drop down to chapter 3 and see what even the Pharisees admitted. Now, there was a man of the Pharisees named Nicodemus, a ruler of the Jews. The same came to Jesus by night and said to him, Rabbi, we know you are a teacher from God. Now, being one of the rulers, that means he sat on the council. That means he was there and discussed these things. He didn't say, I know you're a teacher from God. He said, we know you're a teacher from God. We who? We Pharisees. No, you're a teacher sent from God, come from God. For no man can do these miracles that you do except God be with him. So Jesus really had a tremendous impact, didn't he? Now when we get to toward the end of the sermon, when we read that statement again, behold, the world has gone after him, maybe we'll understand the tremendous impact that Jesus really had. Now, let's go to chapter 4. Yes, let's go to chapter 4. Let's see which verse. Okay, chapter 4 and verse 42. No, let's go to verse 39. We'll pick it up 39 through 42. And this was at the city of Samaria. Remember the whole account of the woman at the well? And then she went back and told them, well, I have met the Christ. I have seen the Christ. He is here. And verse 39, and many of the Samaritans of that city believed on him for the saying of the woman, which testify, he told me all that I ever did. So it was more than just, you know, you've had five husbands and your current one isn't your husband. So when the Samaritans were come to him, they believed him, or sought him, that they would tarry with him, and he remained 2 days. And many more believed because of his word. Now, you know very well what they're going to do. You know very well how they're going to tell everybody. And said unto the woman, now we believe, not because of your saying, for we have heard for him ourselves, and we know that this indeed is the Christ, the Savior of the world. So it wasn't some small thing done over here in a corner. It was beginning to be a big thing. Let's go back to Matthew, the fourth chapter. Let's see what happened right after the temptation. Matthew, the fourth chapter. And these miracles were designed to do that. Now, just think what it would be like today. If there were one real bona fide miracle that people knew about, why they would have the television cameras out there and the radio out there, special reports and the whole thing, right? Okay, let's see what he was doing. Matthew 4 and verse 23. And Jesus went about all Galilee. And that's all that area around the Sea of Galilee. Teaching in their synagogues and preaching the gospel of the kingdom, healing all manner of sickness and all manner of disease among the people. Well, you know, that's got to have an impact. That has got to have an impact. All of those healings. You know how people talk about their health today? I mean, you go almost anywhere. And you get together with a group of people, and one of the first topics of conversation is your health, or your doctor, or your medicine, or the different things that have taken place. Or if you have gotten over a disease, or if one of your children were healed, or overcame a sickness or whatever, that's what you would talk about. Well, how would it be if you came to one Jesus and he laid hands on you and you were healed, or on your child, or on one who was deaf, one who was blind? And we'll see that he resurrected three people also, and this had to have a tremendous impact. Healing all manner of sickness and all manner of disease among the people. And we'll see some other accounts here of his healings. And his fame went throughout all Syria. Now that's that whole area of what we call today in Lebanon. That was Syria at that time. All Syria, clear up in the Bakan Valley, clear up in the Golan Heights, probably almost all the way up to Damascus. And they brought unto him. Now did the word get around? What would you do if you heard or saw one crippled child that was healed, and you had a crippled child? Where is this man? You tell, hey, family, pack up. We're going to go find this man, Jesus, and we want our little girl or little boy healed. So they brought unto him all sick people that were laden with different diseases and torments, and those that were possessed with devils or demons, and those that were lunatic, and those that had palsy, and he healed them. Now let's continue and see what else was happening. And there followed him great multitudes of people. So they were just following great multitudes of people. Huge crowds were following him. Now I don't know if how many of you saw what was the so-called Easter celebration in Jerusalem this year. They showed some of it on television. And in those narrow streets, the people were just really crowded in, packs and crowds of people. And every time I see that, I think of what it was like, these great multitudes of people following Jesus. Oh, Lord, will you heal me? Oh, Lord, this. And just those going along to see. You know, you have a lot of gawkers and lookers, and as soon as, you know, that day would be over, they'd go tell someone, and more gawkers and lookers would come. Let's see how far it went. Okay, and there followed him great multitudes of people from Galilee, that's on the north and the west shore of the Sea of Galilee, from Decapolis, that's over on the north and on the east side of the Sea of Galilee, from Jerusalem, and from Judea, that's all the area down around Jerusalem, and from beyond Jordan. Now that's saying quite a bit, isn't it? That's an awful, tremendous impact. And this was just in the first year of his ministry. Remember, he had 2.5 years to go. Well, let's go to here, just since we're in the book of Matthew, and let's see the diseases that he healed. Here, chapter 8. Chapter 8, we find in a lot of this, I'm not going to necessarily read every verse, but I'm going to go ahead and summarize some of them. Here in verse 1, and when he came down from the mountain, great multitudes followed him. So here again are the great crowds following him. And behold, there came a leper and worshipped him, saying, Lord, if you will, you can make me clean. Now can you imagine the people knowing that he was actually being worshipped? They saw him worshipping. Okay. Jesus put forth his hand and touched him, saying, I will be clean. Now, I don't know how many of you have ever seen some reports on television about leprosy, but I saw some here last week, and it's a really an awful, terrible, miserable, horrible disease. And it just literally eats and rots away the limbs, the fingers are eaten away, and it's so painful, and it'll just eat away the whole arm, and it eats away the inside of the structure of the face, and the whole face caves in. It is just awful. And there was no cure, no cure, absolutely no cure. And so here, this, and they get all crippled. They can't walk. They can hardly do anything with the little stubs of fingers that they have left. And every time I read that, here's this man desperate coming up to Jesus and say, Lord, if you will, heal me. And he said, yes, I will, and touched him. Now, anyone who knows anything about the Jews really needs to understand that to touch a leper was like the kiss of death. You weren't to touch a leper because you would be unclean. So he touched him, said, yes, I will. And immediately his leprosy was cleansed. And Jesus said to him, see, you tell no man, but go your way and show yourself to the priest and offer the gift that Moses commanded for a testimony unto them. Now, we know the other account, what happened. The young man didn't be quiet. He went away and broadcast it everywhere. So then he came to Capernaum, and there was a centurion, and said, well, my daughter is sick, or my servant, rather, is sick at home with the palsy. Now, I am sure that had to do much like what you would consider a Parkinson's disease, where they were just really rigid and all shriveled up in a palsy, and he said he's tormented. So Jesus said, I will come and heal him. And the centurion said, Lord, I'm not worthy. You know the account. He said, just give the word. And he was healed by the word of Christ, not even being there. So then he said, go your way, verse 13, because you believe, so it's done. So then Jesus came into Peter's house and so forth, and then healed her. And all the different healings that we have in chapter 8, and then we come down here to chapter 9, and he entered into a ship and passed over, that is the Sea of Galilee. No, let's back up here to chapter 8 and verse 33. And they that kept them fled, that is this is the casting of the swine down into the Sea of Galilee, and told everything that had befallen to the possessed of demons. And behold, the whole city came out to meet Jesus. So here's a big uproar. Wherever Jesus went, it was a big uproar. It was really something going on. And when they saw him, they besought him that he would depart out of their coast. He became an enemy to them. So that shows the problems that takes place. Okay, now let's go to chapter 9. And he entered into a ship and passed over and came to his own city. And behold, they brought to him a man sick of palsy lying on a bed. So here's a stretcher case. And Jesus, seeing their faith, said unto the sick of palsy, son, be of good cheer, your sins be forgiven you. Now there were certain scribes said within himself, this man blasphemes. And then, you know, the account that took place. You know, the man rose from his bed, took it up, rolled it up, and walked out of the house. And verse 8, but when the multitude saw it, they marveled and glorified God, which had given such power unto men. So you see the stage that is being set. You see the impact that is coming along here. Let's go to Luke, the 7th chapter now. Luke 7. Let's pick it up here in verse 11. Now, this is the time of raising of the dead man, the only son of a widow. And, of course, that was a tragic case. And lots of times it helps us if we can kind of mentally put ourselves back into that picture. Let's just picture ourselves as one of the mourners, and we're walking down the road going to the cemetery. And here's the widow, her only son. Her husband died. All of her other children were not living. This is the only one. Now, verse 11, Luke 7. And it came to pass the day after that he went into a city called Nain. And many of his disciples went with him, and many people. And when he came near the gate of the city, behold, there was a dead man carried out, or that is, being carried out, right as they were coming in. The only son of his mother, and she was a widow, and much people of the city with her. And when the Lord saw her, he had compassion on her, and said to her, weep not. And he came and touched the brier, that is the casket. And they that bore him stood still. And he said, young man, I say to you, arise. Here they're carrying out the casket. He's laying dead in there. Walks up and stops the procession and says, young man, arise. And he that was dead sat up and began to speak. Now, he sat up and he probably said, hey, what's going on? What What am I doing in this casket? Oh, that's right, I was sick. Yeah, you died. And he, that is Jesus, delivered him to his mother. Probably reached up and just helped him down out of the casket. And there came great fear on all, and they glorified God, saying that a great prophet had risen up among us, and that God had visited his people. Verse 17, and this rumor of him went forth throughout all Judea and through all the region round about. Now, did they know who Jesus was? Yes, they did. Now, we're talking about some exciting times. And we're talking about a major event. We're talking about the one that was the great God who created the universe, now as a human being, visiting his people, just like it said here. Doing everything that he said that his ministry would include. Let's just go back to Luke, the fourth chapter now. Luke 4. And let's see what Jesus said that his ministry was all about and see what he did here. We'll just pick it up here in verse 16, Luke 4. And he came up to Nazareth where he had been brought up, and as his custom was, he went into the synagogue on the Sabbath day and stood up for to read. And there was delivered to him the book of the prophet Isaiah. And when he had opened the book, he found the place where it is written, "The Spirit of the Lord is upon me, because he has anointed me to preach the gospel to the poor. He sent me to heal the brokenhearted, to preach deliverance to the captive, recovering of sight to the blind, and to set at liberty them that are bruised." And that's what we've been seeing right here with all the healings that he was doing. Now, there are many other places that we can do, go to and show what was done. And we also know that he sent his disciples out, didn't he? He sent out 70 of his disciples two by two. And what was their commission? What were they to do? To heal the sick, to raise the dead, and to drive out the demons, and so forth, cleanse the lepers, and to preach the gospel. Well, you can imagine what effect that had. They would come into a town, and what did Jesus say? They didn't receive you, go out of the town and shake the dust off your feet. Those that receive you, say, "Peace be upon his household." And what would they say? "Where are you from?" "Oh, I'm sent from Jesus." "Oh, you are? Come in." And then they gather up all those in that community that were sick, that were ill. And the disciples would lay hands on them, cast out the demons. And let's, while we're here in the book of Luke, let's just go to Luke 10. Luke 10 and verse 17. And we'll find out exactly how the disciples felt about it. There were 70 of them. So he had 35 teams of two going out. Now verse 17. And the 70 returned again with joy, saying, "Lord, even the demons are subject to us through your name." Well, that's quite a powerful thing. That's quite a powerful thing, isn't it? And then he said, "Well, don't rejoice over that. You know, rejoice that your names are written in the book of life. That's more important." But the whole point I want to make, again, is that the public knew. The religious leaders knew. They understood. Now let's go to another scripture. Let's go to John, the fifth chapter. Let's turn to John 5, and we'll go through the whole chapter. Not the whole chapter, but we'll just summarize it. Now, let's pick it up here in verse 1. Now, after this, there was a feast of the Jews, and Jesus went up to Jerusalem. Again, great crowds of people around. And there was at Jerusalem, by the sheep market, a pool, which is called in the Hebrew tongue Bethesda, having five porches. Now, this was a special place, we'll see. And in these lay a great multitude of impotent folk, of blind, halted, withered, waiting for the moving of the waters. For an angel went down at a certain season into the pool and troubled the waters, and whosoever was first after the troubling of the waters to step in was made whole of whatever disease he had. And you know what kind of stir this would create when Jesus did this miracle. And there was a certain man there which had an infirmity 38 years. Not just some little sickness, but the infirmity 38 years. Now, it doesn't say how many years that he had been there off and on waiting to get into the water. waiting so that he could be healed. And when Jesus saw him and knew that he had been now a long time in that case, he said unto him, "Do you want to be made whole?" And the impudent man answered him, "Sir, I have no man when the water is troubled to put me into the pool, but while I am coming, another steps down before me." So here's really a tragic case, isn't it? Let's continue on now in verse 7. And the impudent man answered him, "Sir, I have no one when the water is troubled to put me in the pool, but while I'm coming down, another one steps down before me." And Jesus said to him, "Rise, take up your bed, and walk." Now his bed was just kind of a little like a roll-up sleeping bag, so it wasn't any big deal. And then you know the whole controversy that took place after he took up his bed. He rolled up his bed and immediately walked, took his bed, and the same day was the Sabbath. The Jews therefore said unto him that was cured on the Sabbath, "It is the Sabbath day. It's not lawful for you to carry your bed." And he said, "Who said take your bed?" And he said, "Well, the one who healed me. Who was it that healed me?" He said, "I don't know. He's gone." So then Jesus met him in the temple and said, "You know, go sin no more, lest the worst thing come upon you." Then the Jews, right here in verse 17, the Jews wanted to kill him. So Jesus answered them in verse 17, "My Father works hitherto and I work." And the Jews therefore sought the more to kill him. Now, you're not going to try and get rid of someone if he's just kind of doing a little thing over here on the side. You know, they wanted to kill him. Get rid of him. He's causing a lot of problems, see. Because he not only had broken the Sabbath, and of course that's according to their interpretation of it, but also said that God was his Father, making himself equal with God. Now you knew that that's what Jesus told them. They understood who he was. So he was really making an impact. Not just some little thing back here in the corner that was somehow we have a nice little religious event going on. No, this was really way coming right along here. Let's go back to Luke, the 8th chapter. Let's go back to Luke 8 and verse 1. Okay, Luke 8. Let's pick it right up here in verse 1. I'm going to go ahead and turn this tape to the other side.